Hello and welcome. You're watching We the People. I'm Rishika Barua. A 5-year-old girl was severely injured after being attacked by a pack of stray dogs in the outskirts of Pune. Several other disturbing headlines in the past couple of months has put the focus back on the man-animal conflict playing out on the streets outside our homes across the country. Let's make no mistake, strays are not the menace and neither are humans the cause. But the man-animal conflict that is playing out on our streets is dangerous and menacing. Now, there is no government data on dog bites, but just to establish the seriousness of the problem, World Health Organization says India has the highest number of rabies cases globally, with an estimated 20,000 rabies deaths annually, majority being kids under the age of 15 years. Now, again, there is no official government data on the number of street dogs in the country, but it is estimated to be broadly between 3 to 6 crores, with abandoned homeless pets being a big problem across streets and shelters, especially after the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, India animal birth control, or the ABC rules that are there in place, are fraught with a lot of problems and difficulties. And clearly, it lacks a solid implementation on the ground, else we wouldn't be here today discussing this problem. Now, what have other countries done? Now, in the Netherlands, for instance, which claims to have zero strays, they have a range of measures in place, from government-funded neutering programs to incentivizing adoption, or even taxing store-bought dogs, and of course, proliferating centers and shelters. Contrary to that, in the US now, all strays are being moved to shelters, and these shelters are now running out of space, and thus lakhs of strays are actually being euthanized annually in the United States. We have the good and the bad and the ugly right there in front of us. On the show tonight, we're asking a very simple question. What are the ways to best solve the man-animal conflict, and how can we possibly achieve a sense of harmony between human safety and animal rights? Now, obviously, no easy answers there, but I can promise you we have stakeholders on the show tonight who are the best voices, and hopefully we will have some solutions on a way forward by the end of that discussion. In the studios with me, Dr. Abhi Vanak, he's the director at the Center of Policy Design at Atri. Thank you very much for being with us. We also have Annelieke Leninga. She's a program director with Stray Buddy. She's also from the Netherlands, but now an Indian citizen for over a decade, working closely at the grassroots levels. We also have Anantmala Pota. She's worked very closely, headed an RWA in South Delhi. So she'll tell us about what real-life solutions actually work. Pooja Sakpal, co-founder and trustee of Yoda, a very well-known organization from Mumbai that's working with street animals. Also, Aisha Ben is with us. She's the CEO and founder of Neighborhood Woof. She's their NGO is actually impaneled with the MCD in Delhi to carry out birth control measures. So like I said, stakeholders, but I want to begin the show, as always, with the young audience that we have on We the People. Thank you all very much for being with us on the show, to all of you. So a lot of young students and young voices here about the problem, but I want to begin with the youngest. So what do you want to say about this whole problem?
My name is Ishika. I'm 13 years old. And I joined the local dog committee when I was 8 years old, and I learned majorly two things. The first one being that children should be involved in the dog committee, because when children are involved, parents naturally accept it.
Okay.
And the second point is that we can understand what a dog is trying to say by studying its body language and understanding what it's trying to say.
Okay, so I think studying body language actually goes a long way in solving a lot of these problems, or at least telling people on the streets what to be aware of.
So are there any specific strategy in place to address dangerous and aggressive dogs?
Okay, we'll talk a little more about strategies. More questions from the audience. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask that what are the first aid that we can take as soon as we have a dog bite? Because whenever there is a bite, the first thing that we do is we panic.
So okay, so we have the solutions again. You had something, sir.
So, referring to her point, I have personally experienced this. My father was once bitten by a rabid dog while he was returning from work. And it was over 24 hours. He got an injection from a neighborhood hospital. But later, when we consulted with a family doctor, we got to know that he has to get injected with an injection that costs around 30 to 35,000. And it was to give within 72 hours.
Hmm.
And we were very worried about that.
How did you manage to get the injection easy?
Yeah, we did, but it was to come from Delhi. So we got it at a very, very cringe point.
And where were you when this happened?
I was in class 6th at that time.
No, but which city were you in?
Prayagraj,
so
Uttar
the
Pradesh.
injection wasn't available
Yeah.
even in a tier 2 city. Okay.
So my question is, like, there is stigma and misunderstanding about stray dogs that they might bite you, they might infect you. So in your opinion, I want to ask how those stigmas and misunderstanding can be addressed.
Okay. My opinion doesn't matter, but we'll give it to the stakeholders. Yes. Finally, to you. Yes.
For me, it's more of a question for the experts. How do I explain to other people who may want to become friendly with street dogs? What I have seen in my experience is that if you give them time, if you approach it slowly, maybe don't understand
yes.
body language, but
you
it becomes easy to understand.
Dogs yourself.
Right. So I.
And how has that played out as far
it's
as
It's been lovely. I think we've adopted two streeties. They were 6 months old, which is usually not very old for when people adopt.
Hmm.
But we've had a lovely experience. They've become part of the family.
And no, and is there acceptance in
yes.
the neighborhood?
So what I see also is that the neighbors were a little bit aloof and worried initially.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm seeing that as they observe and build trust with the dogs,
okay.
they have also become more friendly. And some
well,
of
the
them...
The reason your story is so important is because I think adoption is perhaps one of the solutions that
Definitely.
We as people can offer. But, you know, let me cut to the chase. The whole point of this conversation was to try and look at solutions. Annalika is sitting right next to me. If I can just begin by asking you, I know no simple solutions, but there are different things that individuals and communities can do on our part. What can we the people do?
Right.
You know, to
yes.
help solve this problem.
I'm so grateful that you are asking the question of what can we do? The solutions. There are so many things we can actually do. And mostly we think that the problems are just, you know, not out of our hands. The government should do something. You
yes.
know, somebody else should do something. But in the community, we can actually work together if we are willing to approach each other with a little bit of empathy and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways of collaborating. If you get together in a group, you can actually have a strategy of systematically mapping all your dogs, then step by step, making sure that all of them one by one are sterilized if it's not yet done. Very often people have already done a lot of work, but you're not aware of who is doing what.
Mm.
So bring people together, first
mm.
of all. And the Residents Welfare Association should be involved if you are in a residential area or any other authority, local body in that area you could work with, because it is actually in the benefit of both. It's not the benefit only of the dogs that we do a lot of work on the dogs. It's in the benefit of the people. So the vaccinations can also be done systematically once you've mapped the dog.
Hmm.
You can do, we have a web tool actually that we developed and upload the profiles of all these dogs.
Okay.
And you can see the percentages in your colony, how much have you achieved already?
Okay.
And then work towards that last bit. And apart from that, of course, the feeding responsibly, all issues are mostly around feeding dogs. Feeders are very often harassed and blamed for the problems, whereas feeding itself doesn't make the dog aggressive. The, maybe the way where it is done, how it is done, where it is done,
hmm.
and by whom it is done. Maybe
but I want to
that.
Ask you, because what plays out very often in hmm. terms of the human conflict is the animal lovers versus the haters. Hmm. And that's where, you know, it becomes almost a feeders versus haters kind
yes.
of a conversation.
Yes.
How do you look at, you know, just people coming together on the same page to understand that it's us versus the problem?
Yes. I think there's a little bit of advocacy to be done. It's not so easy to start bringing people on a platform. You have to have a safe environment also to be able to talk to each other.
Yes.
And very often there's already a lot of baggage.
Yes.
So how do you bridge that gap? I think that if we actually stress that whatever we are doing on the dog side is benefiting the people. I am personally
yes.
not as much of an activist or an animal lover. I would not use the word lover and hater.
Yes.
We have to deal with an environment in which there
okay.
are animals.
Okay.
So how can we deal with these animals best so that we are all benefiting
okay.
and that we're not harming?
Very, very important point that you made is the fact that a lot of work that animal rights activists are actually doing for animals is also very beneficial for society and human beings and in the interest of human safety. I think that's a very fundamental argument. Dr. Vanak, I want to ask you, because we have a program in place in India. It's called the ABC. It's been here for over a decade now. Why has it not worked? What are the problems with the program? What can we do to fix it?
Thanks. And, you know, I think the reason we're discussing this issue on the show is because we're talking about dogs.
Hmm.
If we were talking about other animals, we wouldn't be discussing this. Maybe if you're talking about wildlife, it would be a different kind of conversation.
Yes.
If you're talking about rats, for instance, we wouldn't actually be talking about it. The reason we're discussing this is about dogs. They are our companion animals. So the problem then that happens then is that when you frame a policy that defines a dog as a street animal and not a companion animal. So that's what the ABC rules did in 2001.
Okay.
They created a category called street dogs.
Hmm.
There is no such thing as a street dog. It's a homeless dog. The 2023 version of it carried that forward, that legacy forward. So what did the ABC rules then say? That the street is the natural home of the dog. And what we should do is that if we want to reduce their population, we should sterilize them and release them back where you caught them.
Hmm.
It ignores a whole host of other issues that then arise because of this policy. So the policy itself, one, it's very poor in terms of its the way it's formulated, because it doesn't have any end goal. It says reduce the population. Reduce by how much? What is our goal? So that's the policy side of it. The
implementation
and the concept behind ABC is that it sounds great. That this is a humane way of reducing population.
Mm-hmm.
If you prevent the birth of puppies, then over time, populations will go down. It sounds fantastic in theory, but it only works in theory, or if you live on an island. Because our populations of dogs are so large in all our cities, and they're also large in our suburban areas and into the rural areas. So you have a continuous inflow. As our cities are growing, populations keep growing there because people are moving out. Food is available, populations start exploding those outside areas.
Okay.
And they keep coming in.
So it's a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle. And it requires, it's an all or nothing strategy.
Yes. Okay. So I think you've highlighted the problems and with the policy, at least, you know, in a very articulate way. But what more can we do as stakeholders? I think one big part of it is community engagement. Let me quickly get in Anantmala into the conversation.
Yes.
As a RWA representative, I'm sure you've dealt with all types, right? People who are like ardent believers that the dogs have rights versus people saying that no, it's not safe, etc. How do you mitigate?
Basically, we call these dogs as community and we take full responsibility of them.
Okay.
When they cause any bite also, first of all, we try to tell the people that please feed them properly. Let them sleep. Because as per my understanding, a dog needs 14 hours of sleep, you know.
So let sleeping dogs lie.
Yes.
Okay.
And also,
don't trouble a sleeping dog.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, I feel that whenever there's a dog bite, we instantly action the things. You know, we send the dog.
But how do you foster that sense of harmony? Or have you... tried to do it and it hasn't worked. What have you seen on the ground?
No, we have always been, fortunately for us, we have always been successful.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever there is a dog bite, immediate action is to send the dog to a shelter for a few days. When it comes back, we ensure that he again becomes friendly with other dogs as well as the community.
Okay.
The residents also understand that, yes, there may be a... incident of dog bite
how effective has it been to find these shelters? Because what I have seen personally and anecdotally is that shelters are saturated, the infrastructure on the ground is crumbling. People who are working in these shelters are also at times just putting their hands up because they just can't, you know, physically accommodate. So what's your experience been with shelter?
Fortunately for us, we have always been able to find a shelter.
Okay.
And we pay for it and we ensure that the dog is taken care
of. Okay. I want to bring in Pooja into the conversation, Pooja, because, you know, you're also working in a certain sense at the helm of it. Give us a sense of what the condition is across shelters. How saturated, you know, is the situation in terms of infrastructure support? Are you getting any? You, of course, you know, you're at the helm of affairs at Yoda in Bombay. Tell us what it's like.
Yeah. Hi. So basically what happens is how the shelter operates. We are a handful of people and we have thousands and thousands of dogs living. The best way to approach is, yes, neutering programs by the BMC, which helps us. We also would have something, known as, we are also working towards the rabies elimination.
Okay.
So we are doing, So we are viewed as one of the stakeholders where till 2030, we plan to eliminate rabies in India. So the program has been started. But if you're talking about a handful of people doing shelter work and taking care of animals and doing the ABC program, it's just not going to work out because you've got millions of dogs here. Moreover, what happens is, yes, the CSR funds are open, but it's more open to the human child, cancer, food, lunch for food, I mean, lunch for kids and everything. But it's very less for animals. If it was a wild animal, as doctor said, you know, it would have been a totally different situation. But here, because these are free roaming animals, you don't call them stray anymore. So the UN has kind of said, these are known as free roaming animals. So putting them as a stray, they are not, this is their home. And it's, we have come into their home. And yes, they are multiplying. But there is a way we have to do, and we have to do it and target the area faster. In the sense, everyone needs to be on ground, like even the societies, the NGOs or the AWBI has to be on board to tackle the situation together.
Right.
As we are tackling the situation of
rabies. What are some of the big difficulties that you face? If you could tell us, Pooja, briefly, and you know, what according to you are some of the solutions that you'd look at?
See, the problems we face is definitely a monetary problem because nothing comes free. Even if I want to neuter a dog or a cat, I have to pay the bills for the vet, for the medicines, the pharma companies we buy medicines from. Nothing is free for us.
Right.
And whatever the government pays is there is a substantial amount. Like it's a fraction of amount what we get paid.
Yes.
But we still kind of work out with people who donate and who would kind of help out in clearing their society. So Malad, if you check our area right now, where we have a second shelter, we have, in 6 months, we have neutered 1,200 cats. But still, we don't see a difference because everything keeps on coming from outside. And we need to put a stop. Like, I can do 1,200 per, I can do like 1,200
So you're saying the localized
months,
community solutions don't
has
necessarily
to come together.
Work because it's not a problem. Like Dr. Vanak also said, it's not something that you can localize and, you know, geographically
you can't.
Therefore
it
differentiate.
Is,
until and unless you have multiple stakeholders that are actually working geography to geography, which if I'm not wrong is not happening. Most people are working in silos.
And we can't
I think what
stop.
Aisha, I know you've been listening very patiently. You're also a very keen stakeholder in terms of understanding how the program in India is working. What do you think we can do better?
Okay. Hi, everyone. First, Rishika, I would really like to congratulate you because I think you covered it in a nutshell in the beginning. I think the biggest problem is with the animal birth control program actually being able to address the issue of dog bites and whether it really works. I have actually read a lot of the papers that Dr. Vanak has written as somebody who's completely following the ABC program. I am curious and keen to see what critics of the program have to say. And I believe that, and in fact, I think he would agree here in his own papers have stated so, that it is implementation, the lack of proper documentation available from the government that is the key problem. I'll get straight to the solutions because I believe in those very strongly.
Yes.
I'll start with the most important, which is education and awareness. Honoring what the youngest person amongst us said, that at the end of the day, children and elderly are the most vulnerable, and education and awareness, in fact, was considered the number two contributing factor to eradicating rabies in Goa recently. We don't actually require hundreds of organizations and hundreds of lots and lots of resources, contrary to what we are being made to believe. Neither are the solutions as complicated as we are making them out to be. I'll give you an example. With COVID, the Delhi government made it so clear how to combat COVID. They gave you zones. They gave you demarcation areas. There were red, yellow. Need to do the same for rabies control. And rabies is actually much easier. In Delhi, if you look at from the government's side, corruption is the biggest reason preventing ABC from making the effect that it does. There is practically no proper surveillance that's happening. That is the reason why you say there are not enough numbers available to us, either of dog bites or the number of dogs. The livestock census data for 2012 and 2019 has been copied and pasted. So the first thing we need to address is surveillance. And in addressing the corruption, my answer to addressing the corruption is actually to include local feeders, caregivers, and RWAs. The reason the battle exists on the street, why is it that people who have a problem with dogs or who get bitten by dogs, why is it that they go to the animal lovers and the feeders? Because they go to the authorities and they rarely get answers. The people available right in front of them, taking stock and responsibility of the problem, are feeders and caregivers.
Yes, so and they become the villains in a certain sense as far as the story is concerned.
Absolutely. And it's extremely frustrating because if you look at my center's numbers, we've sterilized over 20,000 dogs. Over 70 to 80% of these dogs have been brought to us by animal lovers, not the municipality. And I am empaneled by the municipality. Yes. If you look at our numbers for last year, 2,700 dogs were bought by animal lovers, 500 dogs were brought by municipality.
I think that also validates Annalika's community participation point in a big way. So,
absolutely.
I mean, questions need to be answered by the MCD, but it validates the community participation point for sure. Yes.
Absolutely. So, my answer to making the system more accountable is to include caregivers in it.
Okay.
They hound organizations such as me to ensure that their dogs come back to the right place, that we've picked them up properly.
Yes.
So, they are the answer.
Okay, I do want to get Dr. Vanak back into the conversation because he had a very different point of view. Do you agree that if you can actually, like she said, I think the COVID example is a really nice way, Aisha, that you explained it. Do you think it'll work?
So, okay, there's a couple of things here.
Are we oversimplifying it?
Yeah, you know, everything will work if you throw enough money at it. Many things will work if you throw enough money at it. It's a fundamentally bigger problem or question. It's the idea that we should have lots of dogs on the streets. Somebody said, you know, they're free roaming dogs. Yes, they are free roaming because we've let them be. But they're not, they're still domestic dogs are,
Saying they don't belong on the street.
Yeah, because they're domestic
either
animals.
You have infrastructure to support it, or you in a certain sense foster adoption because they don't belong on
the street. Absolutely, because there's very poor welfare outcomes for them. This is poor animal welfare. Yeah.
Okay, you disagree?
Yeah, because they dogs are the second highest cause of road accidents in India. This is according to the IRDAI.
Yes.
A report that they made. They get exposed to cruelty, starvation in many cases, disease. And I know that animal caregivers do spend a lot of time trying to do it, but there are lots of, just as there are a lot of responsible animal caregivers, there's actually a greater number of irresponsible animal caregivers.
Okay.
And this is what we found in Bangalore in a study.
You raised a very fair point. I know you disagreed. You want to quickly come in? I'm running out of time.
I do think that there are irresponsible caregivers, but that we should not go by them.
But those are the majority.
Yeah. I think that inherently the species of a dog, where we go back into history, has never been confined.
So I don't want to get into the caregiver's argument, but the point that he raised about the fact that dogs don't belong on the street and therefore we should have a larger ecosystem, whether it's in terms of shelters or fostering adoption. Do you agree with that?
So where do we go? Do we actually start confining dogs, cats, rats? Where do we go? I mean, at some point, I mean, companion animals, I buy that point, absolutely. The dogs have actually come to us in history and we saw a symbiotic relationship because they warned us for whatever it is. So it is become a companion animal. But do we need to confine them? And to what extent do we need to confine them? We go into crates.
I'm very glad we have divergent point of views, different arguments as well. But you know, one of the audience members, and I promised them that I'll try and get most questions answered. I think the strategy question has been answered to an extent. You know, I really appreciate the points that have been made about, you know, thinking of this at an individual level and at a community level. But I think the medical community also needs to be brought into the conversation. It would perhaps go a long way in saving lives. Like the young member of the audience raised concerns about what happened with her father, accessibility to information. Yes, I'm running out of time, so I'll give you 10 seconds. Go ahead.
I have one thing to say, which is that we need to include rabies and dog bites
okay.
in the integrated disease surveillance program,
okay.
by which tuberculosis and such like are reported to the government.
Very, very important.
Because we yes. as organizations are not, we can't make data-driven decisions because the dog bites okay. don't reach us.
Okay. Well, I think I can't thank you all enough for being on the show. I wish we had more time, but we don't. It's been a fascinating conversation in order to understand A, the finer nuances of the problem, and B, also to understand that there are actually solutions, some hiding in plain sight, some already being implemented. We just need to think harder and work together in order to make this happen. Let's not make anybody the evil here. Let it be us versus the problem and the menace, not us versus the creatures who some of us love very dearly. With that, it's a wrap on this edition of We the People. Thank you very much if you've tuned in tonight.